I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it. This is your Kick-Ass Life podcast, episode number 245.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey, Ass Kickers, welcome to another episode of the podcast. As always, I am so glad that you are here. So summer is winding down, and I don't know about where you live, but over here in the South, it's sort of that time of the summer where we'll get a couple of days where it cools off a little bit, and then you're like, oh yeah, fall is coming. The crisp autumn air is here. And then it's a couple of days of just heat. And you're like, nope, summer's still here. It's not going anywhere, I guess. Oh my gosh, it's one of those really hot days. We're in a couple of hot days right now as I record this. And the humidity, if I don't go outside for a run before probably 8:30 or 9, if I'm not done by then that humidity, I feel personally victimized by the humidity if I am out running after 9 a.m. It is brutal. But alas, I carry on. I wanted to tell you real quick before we jump in that we are in the final days of the early bird pricing for the mentorship. We are down to just a couple of spots left. And on September 9th, the price goes up. So if you've been kind of thinking about it, I know there was a couple of you on my live Q&A jam that I did who were kind of thinking about it. And I don't think I've seen your applications come through, but even just filling out the application can get you clear on if you feel like this program is for you. This is not a beginner's course. I teach a more beginner's course in January called Raise Hell, but the mentorship is really about huge transformation. It's about commitment to the work. It is the Daring Way curriculum, which I usually facilitate only in a one-on-one setting, but I've decided to roll out some live retreats. And this particular program allows you the convenience of staying home. And we still get to meet on video so I can see your beautiful faces and we can connect that way. So head on over to yourkickasslife.com/mentorship. You can read all about it, fill out an application and see if it's for you. And hopefully we will get to hop on the phone to chat about it. So today I have a listener Q&A episode for you. The questions brought to you from one of our Patreon pledges, and I will talk more about that in the episode a little bit. And it's such a great group of questions, actually more than one question, that I was kind of like, I can't believe I've never talked about this on the podcast, 245 episodes, and this is the first time. So I'm so grateful for this listener for asking these questions about what do you do when your family or your partner just kind of isn't on board with your personal development or some other kind of nuanced struggles and challenges that this particular listener is bringing to us today. I have brought on my best friend in the whole wide world, Mrs. Amy Smith. And she's actually been on the podcast, I don't know, several times for different varying things. And you'll hear about some other podcast episodes that we've done together. And I've linked those in the show notes. But she's one of those people, first person I thought of, because this is what she specializes in. And I am excited for you to have a listen. And I have also linked to Amy's site in the show notes. She is also known as the Joy Junkie. And so without further ado, let's start this conversation. And we're live with Amy Smith.
Amy, yay! Smith. I'm so excited to hang out.
It's been a minute since you've been on the podcast. I was looking, and we haven't even Skyped for 9 months. So I think that was probably the last time. It's been a while.
Oh my gosh! You could have had another baby in that time.
I could have. Which my ovaries won't. Did you say ew?
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, Amy Smith is child-free by choice. Yeah. Ovaries, on the other hand, are wanting more babies, but my husband, that's a no for him.
Oh
yeah. I just want to hold someone's baby and smell it, and I'll try not to bite it, but I can't promise.
Just a little nibble, just a nibble on a cheek or a thigh.
Yes. Okay. So that's happening. And I wanted to ask you, I haven't even asked you about this.
Okay.
I don't like it when I don't know about things. I hate when I have to find out something about you on social media, which hasn't happened in a while, except for your hair loss, which I can totally edit that out. I was like, what? How do I not know?
No, you can leave it in. I'm totally losing hair. Yeah. It's a mess. Huh. Literally.
Okay. Well, and I don't, and I haven't asked you about this because there's been so many things going on in our lives, other things that we've been talking about. I did, for those people that follow me on Instagram, probably know that I'm mildly obsessed with Instagram stories. And I know that a lot of you that listen to the podcast watch my Instagram stories. So I thought it would be funny. So how it started was, you know, Glennon Doyle Melton and my friend Elizabeth Dialto are doing, like, you can use the option, like, ask me questions. And I think you've done it before.
Yeah.
Where people ask you questions. And so I started harassing my friend Elizabeth and asking her just these dumb, ridiculous questions. Like, have you ever done a sit-up and farted at the same time in front of anyone? Have you ever called out the wrong dude's name during sex? Like, just these ridiculous questions. I sent her like 10 of them in a row. And I was cracking up. I don't know if she was cracking up, but I was entertaining myself with my questions. So I took it to my audience and I said, I want you to ask me questions, but nothing about personal development. Just ridiculous questions. Some of them were so funny. This one woman asked me, if you were a giraffe and it was the first day of work, what color would your tie be?
Duh, red. It's a power tie.
No, I said an extra long one with hot dogs printed on it. Oh. My preference. I did have to think about that for a minute. But someone asked me, have you ever pooped your pants?
Oh.
And I don't know if you remember, but I had that episode. It was like 4 years ago when I – and I'm not ready to tell the full story. I know I PM'd a couple people because they were dying laughing, just the tidbits of the story that I did tell them. And I had had shoulder surgery and I was really constipated and I drank this stuff that was like rocket fuel for your bowels. And I had an experience. So I need to get that together. I need to get myself together to tell that full story because it's hilarious and it involves like Dulcolax suppositories and yeah. Q-tips. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes. Q-tips.
Of course I remember that. Of course
it
I remember that.
Horrible. And it was so funny when I told the story to, you know, obviously only the people that are close to me. There were so many funny details about it. I'm like, I need to write this all out. And yes. Then I thought, I wonder if I should put this as a blog post because it's pretty damn funny. And then I was like, no, people are going to be so horrified that I shit.
Well, you know what? It's one of those things that like nobody talks about publicly, but almost everybody has one of those like mortifying stories. I'm a total poop smuggler, by the way, because I had a situation when I was young. I was probably like 12. I was at my aunt and uncle's house. They bought an old schoolhouse that they converted into their home, but it was built in like the late 1800s. And so I couldn't get it to fucking flush.
Oh my God.
So I was mortified. I didn't grow up in a family where we talked about excrement and stuff. So I straight up, I had a baggie for all my toilet.
Oh my God.
For my
toilet. I've never heard this story.
So I straight up did the inside out doggy scoop up situation into the bowl and I scooped it all up. I grabbed all my, you know, toiletries that I could, like the bags, because I had just a bunch of like Ziploc bags. Uh-huh. And oh my gosh. And I had a Flintstones lunchbox at the time that was shaped like an actual rock that I kept my toiletries in. And this is hilarious. I completely forgot about this.
Oh my God.
So I smuggled it in my Flintstones lunchbox from the upstairs all the way down and found like an outdoor trash. And I got away. And so no one had to know that I was a poop smuggler, but that's my past.
Turd smuggler. So wait a minute. Didn't you leave behind some poop debris? Like it's not-
Well, I could get that to flush. It was like a weak ass like toilet that was like, I guess we could do liquid. Do you know what I mean? You know those types of toilets.
I thought that the story was going to end with you forgetting about it. And then as a parent, I can totally understand opening up a Flintstones lunchbox and being like, who the fuck? Shit. But not being that surprised. As a parent, like, this is what we deal with.
That is just what I used for transport. Because I was older. I was like 12 or something like that. Right. So I had grown, like I had gotten to the point where the lunchbox was cool. Actually, I might have been closer to 14.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But no, and I think I told my family later, like many, many years later, I can't remember, but
I knew somebody that had a similar story and they were dating someone and that happened and the toilet didn't flush and they had taken a big old turd and they had gotten a ladle from the kitchen.
Oh my God.
It wasn't me. I honestly don't know what I would have done. I have probably been in that situation before, that mortifying situation of, oh my gosh. Yeah. There's that movie. I'm sure people listening have seen it. It's called The Big Sick. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Based on a true story. It's a really cute love story. And in the beginning, they're on a date and they sleep together. And I can't remember if they were dating or not, or if it was like a one night stand situation. And she wakes up in the middle of the night and he has a roommate that sleeps on the couch and the bathroom's right there. And she has to poop and he's there and she's like, oh my God, what do I do? And everyone's sleeping. And then he wakes up because he's like, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to go across the street to the diner. It's like 2 a.m. She's like, have some coffee. And he's like, why? And she's like, I don't know. I just feel like coffee. And he's like, can I come with you? And she's like, no. And it was like really weird, you know? And then she breaks down. And she's like, I have to take a shit. And your roommate's sleeping right there. And I just died. Who hasn't? Yeah, that happens. It happens.
Oh my gosh.
My question was, who has to shit in the middle of the night? And I asked that out loud as we're watching the movie and my husband raised his hand.
Stop it. Really? Never. I never, ever, ever have to poop in the middle of the night. Like, I don't think that's ever happened. I'm going to have to talk to Jay about this because this is an abnormality. So is this podcast about personal development?
Yes. Today, the listener Q&A is, I took a shit.
No. We are a class act.
Sorry, guys. We got a little ahead of ourselves. I really hope this isn't somebody's first episode that they're listening to. And they're like, why did my friend recommend this?
Oh my God.
Shitting in your lunchbox, turd smugglers. Okay. Moving on.
Oh my God. Good. All right.
This is a no-nonsense show.
That's right.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
All right. So we have a brave, courageous person who asked really great questions. And I think that this is applicable to so many people. She asked several questions that are all very directly related. And I think at least one of them, somebody can relate to and say, yes, I feel that way too. And it's about something that I definitely think is in your wheelhouse. So you're the first person who I thought to come on and talk with me about this. So her name is Sarah. We're going to call her Sarah. And her main question is, how do you navigate family and friends when it comes to your self-help journey? So there are three parts to the first section of her question. She says, whether it be your spouse or your partner who is trying to help, but maybe too pushy, or you feel like you're disappointing him when you are not reaching your goals quickly. And then she says, or maybe your family who may be trying to protect you. They don't exactly discourage you, but are not exactly supportive of your big goals. And the last part of this question, she says, or your friends and family who will not let you forget your past mistakes, constantly bringing up embarrassing situations or failures. The first thing I want to say is that family is complicated. Like, let's get that out of the way.
Yep.
I think when we're talking about these types of situations, when it's with a coworker or a neighbor or even a friend, I'm just having compassion for this listener asking the question, for people out there who have to navigate these types of things when it is your family. Family is complicated, not giving you an out, but I know from personal experience, it's always harder with family. And to me, this is really a matter of needing to have some difficult, possibly awkward conversations and boundary setting. So I'm going to start with the first one about her partner. Partner's trying to help, but maybe too pushy, or you feel like you're disappointing him when you are not reaching your goals quickly. I could have asked her and did not have time to get more information. Has she had a conversation with him about this? What do you think? I feel like it's a boundaries and conversation that needs to happen with him.
Well, the first thing that I thought of, which I completely agree with you, the first thing I thought of is, you feel like you are disappointing him. To me, what that is a story. Like,
yeah, this
she's experienced
made up.
Mm-hmm. Like a snide comment or something like that. Maybe not even snide, just a comment that you read into and went, that must mean my partner is disappointed in me, or they don't think I'm going fast enough. That to me makes it sound like there hasn't been a conversation, but you just inferred what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you actually have to tell him that. And one of the things that I will tell people to use as sort of a tool, like an entry point in conversations like this, is to claim that part and say, hey, babe, there's been some stuff that's been going on for me. And I realize I have made up a complete story about how you feel about whatever it is, my current self-help journey or the class that I'm in or whatever you're referring to. I've made up this whole story about what you think about it. Mm-hmm. And that's completely unfair to you. So I thought, hey, let me just ask you, when you say things like blah, 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 what's really happening for you? And you just have to have an honest conversation about it. But that does not mean for 1 second that that's easy. Right.
So, yeah. And I think that what many people might do instead of what you just said is go to blame, because we get attached to our stories that we make up and we perceive them as truth. And I don't know if that's where she's at, but it sounds like it might be that way. And instead of saying, you make me feel like you're disappointed in me.
Right.
We don't know what he's doing. And he might be thinking that he's being really encouraging and it's stuff that she's making up. I feel like it's probably her own shit and she just needs to have a conversation and say, like, what do you mean exactly when you say X, Y, and Z? Because I'm making up that it means this. Am I wrong? Am I right? Yeah, we can start the conversation there.
Exactly. Or you can just say, am I onto something? Am I completely making this up? You know, I had a situation like this not terribly long ago that I think can be a great example that people are likely going to relate to. So I used to do this type of yoga in our living room. And it was the person who taught it, his name is Dylan. And so I would refer to my workouts as my dates with Dylan. Well, I had to be on a hardwood floor. So I had to do it specifically in our living room at the time. And as we were getting ready to move across the country, slowly but surely, there was a bunch of shit that started accumulating in that living room. So my husband says to me one day, he says, are you still doing your dates with Dylan? And in that moment, I went to this place of, holy shit, he thinks I'm getting fat. He thinks that I'm ugly and unattractive.
I did not know where this was going.
He's asking me, are you still working out? Right. And so that was the facts of the matter. That statement was the exact statement. And then I took the facts and created a story about what he meant by that and completely went into this rat race, you know, about it. And so I just called it out right then. I said, oh my gosh, babe, in my head just now, I went to this place where I made that mean that you think I'm getting lazy with my fitness or you know, maybe aren't attracted to me anymore, blah, blah. And he goes, oh my God, no, I just felt like I was dumping so much stuff in the living room. I wanted to move it out of your way if you needed room in the living room. Like he was concerned about him and if he needed to do a task in order to make my life easier. And I created a completely different story.
Yeah.
But had we not talked about it and me used to say, here's what's happening in my mind. Am I onto something? And do it in a nice way, not accusational, not biting, but just like, hey, babe, I just went to this place. Am I onto something? And then he could go, oh my God, no, not at all. And then squashed, done.
Easy, done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so much easier. And then that takes practice. And
for sure.
Just, I think the first step though is noticing when you make up the story right away, because we make up stories. It's just what our brains do. It's part of the human experience. And we might not notice until days later when we're being passive aggressive or picking a fight about something else completely. And then we realize like, oh, that comment that he made started this whole thing. And that takes practice. I know for me, you know, I've had to really work on it. And now I know pretty much immediately when I make up a story. And I usually...
Totally.
And sometimes I have to clarify, like the example you just gave, but usually I know that it's total BS and then I just made it up and move on.
Well, so here's what's sticky about these sort of situations. Like that's great if you can do that in your own mind and move on. I think a majority of people start to gather evidence. So let's say I didn't say anything. And so the story that I've created is one of what this listener wrote in. Like, I'm disappointing him. He wants me to reach my goals much faster. He's being really pushy. Like you had this story, right? So had I not said anything, it's likely that if my husband said something like, ooh, those pants are looking nice and tight, and it was a sexual reference, that I would make it mean, oh my God, he thinks I'm fat. He thinks I'm unattractive. He thinks I'm letting myself go. Or if he made a comment about, oh, I think she's a really attractive person, I would have spun that all out. So then that's what happens then once you create a story, you start gathering evidence to support it. The antidote is to talk about it. And like you said, it does take practice. Oh my God.
Well, that brings me to the next question that she has, and talking about her family, where she says, maybe your family's trying to protect you. They don't exactly discourage you, but not exactly supportive of your big goals. My first reaction is like, well, then just don't tell them about it. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on who the family members are. And I think that what can happen is we get so excited about our future and what we have going on. And no matter what the goals are, we assume that our family is going to be the first point of contact. They are required to be the most supportive. And that is not always the case. Their own shit comes up. And I think she has two choices. She can either have a conversation, same what we were just talking about, you know, with her family and from a place of kindness and just say, I get that you are trying to be supportive and I so appreciate that. And I know how much you love me and want to see me do really well. But when you say this, I interpret it this way. And I just feel like there might be a different way to support me. Again, you can probably put better words around it, Amy, but or just find different people to be your support system and be your cheering squad, because they might just not get it. They might not have the ability to be the support system that you need.
Right. Right. And a lot of times we want them
we're
to do that
to
support
it. Mm-hmm.
Because we love them. But a lot of times I will say, speak your truth into ears that can hear you. Not everybody has the capacity to hold your biggest vision. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad thing. It's a matter of—
It doesn't make them wrong or bad.
Exactly. It just means that they have a certain set of beliefs that they're operating under. So many years ago, when I was transitioning from a career in makeup artistry into personal development, here I am leaving a company that had full tuition reimbursement for collegiate endeavors. They had incredible benefits. I mean, it was unreal, right? So when I start telling everybody, oh, I'm going to be a life coach, I'm going to start my own business, and I'm going to leave all of this security, everybody came out of the woodwork with their own limiting beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. They came out saying, well, what are you going to do about insurance? Well, what are you going to do if you know, we have another recession? What are you going to do? And what they were saying was, I love you so much. And I also have a shit ton of disempowering beliefs myself. So I'm worried about money and I'm worried about insurance and I'm worried. And so they put it on you and they don't really realize that. So I think, Andrea, to your point, I am absolutely on board with not choosing them as your confidants. Mm-hmm. But what happens for many of us when we get involved in personal development, it becomes like you joined an MLM, right? And now you're all excited about how you're talking kindly to yourself and how you're embracing self-love and courage and all of those things. And so you start petitioning to your family,
right?
Them, hey, I have a really awesome opportunity for you, Mom. And
you should read,
like,
this book.
And they're not in that place.
No.
They're going like, holy shit, Andrea joined a cult, or now mm-hmm. she's got, you know, hippie friends online and it's weird. So yeah, I can't advocate enough to really, with clear eyes, look at the people who can champion your biggest life. And please acknowledge that for many of us, that is not our family.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say it's more common than not. What do you think?
I totally agree. And you know where I saw this as well is when I got into recovery. And for me, my first step in recovery was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was so proud of here I go to these meetings where they celebrate every day that you're sober and you get like almost literally a medal. You know, you get a chip like when you have 30 days
yeah.
and 60 days and 90 days. And when you have a year, they have a cake, they have a party. And my husband was like, still not even fully on board that I had a legitimate problem. And as that happens for many high functioning alcoholics, where we haven't shown like major signs of falling apart. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't congratulating me. He wasn't as excited. And I was so disappointed. And someone from Alcoholics Anonymous pointed out to me, and they said, for this particular thing, he probably won't fully understand like we do, because he's not one of us. He doesn't understand how difficult it actually is for you to get and stay sober. We do. So we're going to be the ones throwing confetti for you and, like, you know, giving you a parade. It doesn't mean that he's bad or wrong. It just means that he doesn't completely understand it. And so I had a conversation with him and I said, I don't actually need you to understand completely. I don't think that you ever will, because you're not an addict. I just need you to support what I'm doing. And yeah. What I meant by that is, don't, and he never did. I just was kind of, you know, setting the stage. Don't get upset if I need to go to two or three meetings a week. Don't, you know, roll your eyes if there's a barbecue, if there's an AA barbecue and I want to bring the family. Do you know what I mean? Like, I need you to support it. I don't need you to fully understand and be able to wrap your head around it and immerse yourself in the world of recovery.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that's what I think it might be for Sarah too.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And I think it really depends on the nature of the relationship, but it could also mean, you know, boundaries and just saying like, hey, you know, I know you're coming from a really great place and you're concerned about my benefits, or you're concerned about us taking out a loan, or you're concerned about this program I'm doing online, and you're totally allowed, but I'm on fire about it. So, and then ask for what you need. Like, I'd really appreciate it if maybe we didn't converse about this for, you know, a week or two or a month or ever, whatever it needs to be.
Yes. And have those people to lean on that are your support system. Cause the reaction you might get might not be amazing. Not everyone, when you set a boundary or call something out, not everyone is like, oh my gosh, you're right. I'm sorry. I'll be more compassionate next time. Or, you know,
like rarely.
Right. Well, and that is a great segue for the next one. Okay. Where your friends and family will not let you forget your past mistakes, constantly bringing up embarrassing situations or failures. To me, that is straight up and down boundaries. Like, that needs to be called out and just be really honest, because I guarantee you that person is not expecting you to call this out. And I would say, what, knowing me, and if it was a family member, I would probably wait until it was dire.
Yep.
And they do it. And in the moment, I get pissed off and I'm like, what do I need to do? I feel like I've made amends for this. And I feel like you keep punishing me for it. What do I need to do or say so this doesn't get brought up again? Because it's hurting my feelings.
Yeah. You know, I think you can do a couple of approaches with these sorts of things. I'm getting the picture from this statement that it's almost like, usually how these get brought up is in jest and poking fun and joking in front of other people. And they usually don't realize the impact that it's having on you, right? Because sometimes it's like, oh, here's an inside joke, or here's something that I can joke about in front of the family and we can all laugh. Mm-hmm. And they interpret it more as like connection. And here you are dying of embarrassment and shame, right? So my favorite approach, if it's being presented in jest, is to go back at them with a joke initially. So it would sound something like this. Like, if they were like,
remember that time you smuggled a turd in the lunchbox?
Remember that? Yeah. Remember that time when you were a turd burglar and you, And they get all on your case and you're like, oh my God, let me forget that. So I would probably start with a joke. Like, what's the thing from a Wedding Singer when he's like, my parents died when I was 7. You want to talk about that too? You know, like some sort of joke or movie quote or something. But I would say like, oh, wow, should we talk about all the mistakes that you've made? Ha ha ha. No, seriously though, or on a serious note, or for reals though. I'm sure you don't mean it that way, but that kind of bugs, man. That kind of hurts. Like, I'd really appreciate it if you didn't say that. So you can make it really light kind of in the moment. And then I would pull them aside later and just say, hey, I really didn't mean to make that all awkward. I probably should have shared with you from the beginning how much that bothers me. And then a lot of times I will say what I assume their intention is. So I will say, I'm assuming your intention was not to bring up shame or, you know, embarrass me. But the reality is I still kind of grapple with that stuff. I'm trying to forget myself and move on. So
I assume too that the comeback from the other person might be like, what, you can't take a joke? And I would say, no, I can. And you know me, I have an excellent sense of humor. And just put yourself in my shoes. How would you like it if I kept bringing up a moment for you that was, and you fill in the blank, deeply shaming, humiliating, embarrassing? I don't think you would like it either. And I think that you would want the same respect that I'm asking for.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're aiming more of a, we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, Mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, and again, it depends on how close you are with that person, yeah. But I would probably say, hey man, you know, this is really not about, can I take a joke or not? I'm really trying to just share with you that those specific scenarios are really bothersome for me. You know, like I don't expect you to understand or get it or anything like that. I'm just asking you to not bring it up. That's all I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
And just being really clear about, hey, I don't want to be combative. I don't want to be, are you, can you take a joke? Or can't? That's not what I'm saying. The bottom line is what you are doing is you are establishing a boundary. You're saying, please don't say these things any longer. And then you can continue to follow up as needed. You know, like if it comes up again, like, oh, I heard you smuggled poop. And then you can go like, I thought we went over this already, man. You know, I thought we already talked about this. I'm going to excuse myself. And then you leave and you make a scene if you need to make a scene. And then you continue to follow it up. I think what people don't realize with boundary setting is just getting it out verbally the first time is like pretty much the easiest part of the scenario. The hardest part about boundaries is
the follow through.
The enforcement. Yeah. Enforcing the boundary.
Yes. Okay. Well, and this last part of her question is similar to boundaries, sort of indirectly related. She says, sometimes I feel like I am responsible for everyone's goals. I'm assuming she didn't say this, but I'm assuming she's still talking about her family. Sometimes I feel like I am responsible for everyone's goals, and sometimes that makes me not want to try at all. It is a lot, and I do not know where to begin. I have a large family, and sometimes it feels like I am the only one who wants a better life. It is very overwhelming and discouraging. I feel like I have to make enough money to ensure my parents, brothers, and sisters are financially set for life. It makes me not want to try harder because then more will be expected of me. Sometimes I wish I could be happy in mediocrity. Well, my gosh, my heart just goes out to her, to this listener. And yeah. I just want to acknowledge that it sounds like she's in a really lonely place.
Yeah.
And I think so many listeners know what that feels like who are really passionate about personal development and bettering themselves and being proud of the life that they're living, and their family is not on that same path. And wouldn't it be great if we could just wave a magic wand and they would all be on the same path? I am a firm believer that when our soul picks this body, mm-hmm. that it is your destiny. I mean, for the sake of sounding really woo-woo and life coachy, I truly believe that not all of us are meant to, in this lifetime, be on this path to betterment. Maybe in the next lifetime, maybe in seven lifetimes, they will really get into bettering themselves and the stuff that you're into, listeners out there. And it's, I just want to acknowledge that it's heartbreaking to know how much better it is over here and not have the people that you care about the most on board with you. So first and foremost, I want to say that. Moving into tools on this, I think that I just would be really curious to know why she feels so responsible. It's so easy, I think, for me and Amy to sit here and say, And my therapist had to tell me over and over again, I had one particular family member where I felt responsible for this person's feelings over and over and over again. And she had to tell me, you are not responsible for their feelings. They are grown people, your family, they're grownups.
Yep.
And it's not up to you. And I think that this is a lifelong lesson that we have to keep reminding ourselves. What do you think?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I can't echo enough about the compassion on yourself, but that was the absolute first thing that I picked up on is I feel like I am responsible for everyone else's goals. Because as you read the rest of it, now you start to see that's her belief.
Yeah.
She believes I am responsible for everyone's goals. And then that affects all of her behavior and all of her emotions. So, which is like, spoiler alert, if you believe you're not enough, you're going to feel like shit and probably act like a people pleaser. So if you have a belief that is disempowering, that will filter in the rest of your life. So you see that she's saying, it makes me not want to try. It makes me want to take a step back and kind of, I get overwhelmed, I get discouraged. So here I see that there's a belief that you're holding on to that is impacting how you're feeling, and it's also impacting how you're behaving. And the great news about that is you get to change that belief. And I think the first place to start doing that is to unpack that responsibility. And so I would put at the top of a journal prompt, you know, or at top of a journal page, I would write the prompt of what is my attachment to responsibility for everybody else, and just free write and see what is behind there. And one of the things that I love so much about the work of Byron Katie is she always talks about what's true, like what is really true. So if you are to take a statement like, I am responsible for everyone in my family, or I'm responsible for everyone else's goals, then you ask yourself, is that true? Right. Mm-hmm. And then, well, yeah, it is true. Nobody else is going to take care of da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then you follow it up with, can you know without a shadow of a doubt that it is absolutely 100% true that you are solely responsible for everyone else's goals?
Yeah.
And then you have to grapple with, no, this is actually just a belief. This is something that I'm holding on to. Because when you say, I feel like I have to make enough money to ensure, no, that is just what you're bought into currently. My belief is that I am not responsible for everyone else's goals. And then because of that belief, I feel a specific way and I behave a specific way, right?
I think one of the most loving things we can do is set people free and have them give them the option to take responsibility for their own life. And is it painful to watch them flounder and not live up to their potential? Of course, especially when we care about them so much, which clearly she does. But I just feel like, my gosh, for someone to, you know, as a parent, watching people, and whether they're children or grownups, watching people step into their own power and be responsible for themselves and learn things for themselves, it's a very beautiful thing to watch. And not giving them the opportunity to do that, feeling like whether you're acting on it or not, feeling like you're responsible, that holds them back. It absolutely holds them back. And it just also, I would add to that, to take a look at your values. And I just think it's one of those exercises that can be so incredibly helpful. If you have my second book, the whole last chapter is all about values. Go back and read it, do the exercises, and you might have a value around being of service and being nurturing. And what if you shifted the perspective of what that actually looked like? Mm-hmm. I believe being of service and being nurturing absolutely is about showing people how to take responsibility for their own lives and be in charge of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, and it's something that I would say too is, especially if you are a part of a large family and it feels like there's kind of this through line with all of the questions that she's asked. And I would guess that there's a piece of, and again, I'm totally making this up, but grab it if it hits home and disregard it if it doesn't. But I would guess that there's a piece of an identity that you are attached to. Like, I'm the strong one, or I'm
the oldest. Yeah.
I'm the one who takes care of everybody. And there might have to be a legitimate severing of that identity. And I think that a therapist, a coach, a group program, somebody who's in your corner to hold your hand as you grapple with that, because we don't easily lose pieces of our identity. Uh-huh. So, and a lot of times they're in direct opposition. Like, I want to be free and on my own and independent. And I also love people leaning on me. I love being the one who's responsible. And sometimes there's a mourning process of losing that piece of your identity. So get support, my friend. You deserve it.
Yeah. My heart goes out to her, and it just that it sounds like she, I make up that she might be the oldest. She might be like the responsible one in quotations. And and it might also be, again, I'm making this up, but it might also be a case of where she kind of, maybe she gets a promotion or a great job or buys a new car, and the family's like, maybe, you know, who do you think you are? Like that type of thing, or making jokes about where she is at in her life, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. There was this really great post that Elizabeth Gilbert wrote years ago on tribal shame. And I don't know if it's going to hit home or not for this particular listener, but for those of you who have experienced kind of where you are feeling like a little bit of an outsider in your family because you are into personal development or bettering yourself, or, you know, make more money or have a college degree than your family, and people have made comments about it and things like that. It's really interesting to read, but it's directly related to what you were talking about, Amy, about shedding this identity of who you are. And it runs really deep because it's this biological need that we all have to belong. And especially when it's your family of origin, this first, for lack of a better word, tribe that we belong to, when we don't feel like we belong anymore, that is devastating from a biological level, not just from an emotional level, but parts of our brain tell us if you don't belong to this group, then you will die. And that's also what shame is. So it's super interesting read. Thank you for coming along on this journey with me with this fabulous listener.
Yes, I love it. And, you know, one of the things that I did want to say too is that this is a common concern. This is not like, oh, I'm just having this weird problem navigating friends and family. No. That's like a thing that happens when you get involved in personal development. And I can actually send to you, Andrea, I did a podcast specifically on this, like growing pains of personal development. And when people don't get it, they don't get what you're into.
Yeah, for sure. We'll put that in the show notes. And then you and I did a podcast where I had you on and I interviewed you all about having hard conversations where it's much more specific. So I'll pop that in the show notes as well.
Cool. And you know what? Coincidentally, just yesterday, I was listening to a great Dear Sugars podcast specifically about this, about entitlement from one sibling who's doing better than the other. So lots of resources for you to continue your work.
We'll put it all in the show notes. This listener and the rest of them are going to have a lot to chew on. And thank you everyone so much for being here. Thank you, Amy, of course, always for being here. And until next time, everybody, I will see you all out in cyberspace. Bye-bye.
Everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking.